Welcome back to another episode of the Real Health Podcast. Today we are starting our multi-part series on caffeine. Today in part one, we're going to touch base on what is caffeine. So we're going to talk about it as a substance. What effect does it have on our body from a hormonal perspective? And we're also going to address some questions that you guys sent in through our social media accounts. So we're going to do a little Q&A kind of as we go along, but also at the end. So these are commuter style podcasts. This is designed to be under 20 minutes to give you the nuts and bolts without getting too in depth, but giving you enough information to help you make real health decisions. Today, again, we're going to start with caffeine. This is a hot topic. When we look at caffeine as a whole, you ask, hey, a lot of questions like, how much should I consume? How much caffeine should I consume? How much is too much? When should I consume it? And then we have a lot of myths out there. How does it affect our hormones? Does it stunt our growth? Does it affect our sleep? So we're going to address all those questions today on the Real Health Podcast. So let's dive in. Let's talk about caffeine as a whole. So caffeine is, what is it? It is a compound. Specifically, it's an alkaloid. Now, don't let that throw you off here already in terms of chemistry, but it is a plant alkaloid. There are other alkaloids that you guys are very familiar with, like nicotine, for instance, or even berberine that we use in anti-parasitics and treat the gut and regulate blood sugar. So it is a plant alkaloid. Plant alkaloids, these are substances found in plants. So in our bodies, we actually don't have caffeine receptors. So there is no specific caffeine receptor. We have a different receptor called an adenosine receptor that we'll get into here in a minute. But when we look at plants and their alkaloids, there are certain ones that can have a beneficial effect on the body, caffeine being one of them. Now, alkaloids as a whole, like plant alkaloids, are extremely bitter. So for the most part, if you were to consume just pure caffeine in the purest form extracted from plants, it's going to be really nasty. It's going to be bitter. And most plant alkaloids are bitter. They're bitter in flavor. They're kind of off-putting when we consume them. There's reasons for this because most plants, that is their defense mechanism. So when you think about plants and their ability to survive, and this gets kind of down a rabbit hole of why plants can be toxic, one of those things is alkaloids. Alkaloids are these compounds found within plants that can be toxic to the human body, but they can also be not palatable. So you just don't want to consume a lot of them. This is, again, the defense mechanism of plants. But caffeine, specifically found within certain plants like tea and coffee beans and cacao beans even, or chocolate, is in such low quantities that you really can't taste it in the plant form. When you extract it and you almost overcook it. So if you've ever gone to a coffee shop and they just burn their coffee, right? It's just nasty, bitter. What are you tasting? You're actually tasting those alkaloids in really high quantities. And even tea, when you drink tea and it's brewed at a really high temperature and we get more caffeine release from that tea, it's going to be really bitter. And so that bitterness, that is what you're tasting. You're actually tasting caffeine. You're tasting plant alkaloids. So that's what caffeine is. And specifically, it's really labeled as psychoactive substance. Psychoactive meaning it actively changes your mental, your mind, how you're thinking, how you're processing. So when we look at caffeine, it is to be known, it is a psychoactive substance. It is directly altering consciousness, mood, memory formation, and overall just your neurology. It's altering your brain and how it's functioning in the current moment. So we're going to get a little bit into this like caffeine and its effects on the brain, because this is kind of the base or the foundation of having understanding about how caffeine affects you neurologically, how it affects the brain, how it affects you hormonally through the pituitary gland or the stress axis system, and then in a big one, how does it affect your sleep, right? Does it impact how well you sleep at night? And so let's unpack this now. When we look at caffeine, what it does is it binds to a receptor in the brain called the adenosine receptor, okay? And this receptor within the brain if it's stimulated with adenosine, it causes sleepiness inevitably to put you to bed or sleep at night. So here's kind of how the adenosine system works. When you sleep at night, now minded, that's deep restful sleep, and you rise in the morning, most of your adenosine is cleared out of your brain. So you really don't have much right when you wake up in the morning. As you go throughout the day, based on the circadian rhythm or the 24-hour cycle, your adenosine levels pool. And as they continue to build up, they attach more and more to the receptors of the brain, the adenosine receptors, causing a greater level of sleepiness and drowsiness until you finally pass out, until you go to sleep. That is how adenosine works. When you look at caffeine now, the reason why caffeine helps you stay alert and focused, improves concentration and memory, and really is a performance enhancer. What we're really doing is as caffeine binds to adenosine receptors in the brain, as it binds, it blocks adenosine from binding to the brain. So when that happens, when we get lack of adenosine binding and we get more of a caffeine binding, then our neurons or our nerve cells, well, they're not going to get sleepy and drowsy. They're going to get more signals that are excitatory. They're going to get stimulatory effects. And so now the brain and the neurons, nervous system as a whole, is now stimulated versus calming down. And if we look at caffeine and how much we consume, it has a greater effect to this stimulatory system of the brain. But in essence, that's really what's happening with caffeine. Caffeine is really just working because it's negating the effects of adenosine. So it's opposing its effects because it's taking the place of what adenosine would actually do. That's what caffeine is doing from a psychoactive substance. From like that standpoint, when we look at the true effects of caffeine, that's really what we're seeing. Now, I think this is where we could potentially even get into trouble, right? When we look at the effects now of caffeine, what we're doing is we're using caffeine to stimulate the nervous system. Now, the nervous system will then, through the pituitary gland, will send signals from like a almost like a stress response standpoint. It'll signal to the rest of the body that you're awake, you're alert, and there is action happening within the brain. It is excitatory. So your pituitary gland will communicate to something called your adrenal glands. They sit on top of the kidneys, and the adrenals make hormones that are specific to both stress hormones and sex hormones. The stress hormones being cortisol-based. So body, okay, the brain recognizes caffeine. The brain then through the pituitary gland stimulates this excitatory system through the adrenal glands, makes cortisol, which is stress hormone. And that's why we actually see hormonally the effect of caffeine and stress hormones like cortisol. Now, a lot of questions are asked in this space. Let's camp out here for a second. Questions like, Is there such thing as like a caffeine burnout? Can I consume too much? What's the like tolerable amount? And we'll get into actually some of these questions in part two, where we start talking about caffeine when it comes from, as it comes from sources like chocolate versus tea versus coffee. Are there better sources? Or even caffeine from like pre-workouts? Is there a better way to consume it? They'll talk about the risks of caffeine. We'll talk about the benefits of caffeine. We'll talk about it as a performance enhancer. We're going to do that on the next episode, part two. But real quick, let's touch base on this because it's very important. Does caffeine create adrenal burnout? That's a question that was asked to us. How does caffeine affect your body? So Anna asked, talk about caffeine consumption and specifically hormones. The Armor Beauty team asked specifically, how does caffeine affect the heart and the brain? And then Melanie even asked, does caffeine affect cortisol levels and how? So going back to it, does caffeine affect cortisol? Yes. But it does in a way that's more of a stimulant to the nervous system. And as we stimulate the nervous system, the adrenals make cortisol, that stress hormone. And as it makes that hormone, it can actually create a lot of weird symptoms. So, for instance, if we overstimulate this pathway, or we're poor caffeine metabolizers, and we'll talk about that here in just a second, but as cortisol levels rise, that stress hormone, it does a number of things. And for most of us, it creates the stress response. So heart rate increases. We start getting into like blood vessel dilation, pupillary dilation. We start getting into like adrenaline formation. But also cortisol has an ability to regulate blood sugar levels. So not only can it have a stimulatory effect from adrenaline and like feeling jittery, but actually this is why some people will have a almost like a hyper to hypoglycemic effect. This is where actually blood sugar dysregulation comes into play. When you consume caffeine on an empty stomach, which actually has a greater effect, that was one of the questions that was asked on Instagram. Yes, caffeine does have a greater effect when consumed on an empty stomach, but it can very much alter blood sugar. And when you create this like cortisol spike, which then releases a bunch of glycogen or glucose to the bloodstream, and then it drops because then you make a bunch of insulin, so you get this hypo or really low hypoglycemic drop. This is where we feel really weird, dysregulated, blood sugar is dysregulated, dysfunctional, and we can become hypoglycemic. And so we have to just figure out like what's the dosage of caffeine that our bodies can tolerate. And there's a number of different factors here, and we're about to get into it. But when we look at caffeine and its effects on your hormonal system, it's really just driven through the nervous system. And this is something that's very important because if we're overstimulating the nervous system, if we're overstimulating the brain constantly, and we also are overstimulating the nervous system, not just with caffeine, but with training and poor sleep and with video games or movies and TV and electronics and blue light and environmental toxins, stress, emotional stress, physical stress. Guys, this is what's creating, can create major harm within the body that can result in adrenal fatigue, that where we stop making enough cortisol, we stop making enough DHEA, our hormones start to plummet, our estrogen and testosterone and levels start to drop. This is where we see hormonal dysfunction. Is it caffeine really? No. It's that your nervous system is too stimulated. And so I think it's important to understand that everyone handles caffeine differently. And even if you metabolize it well, but you live a high stress lifestyle, caffeine is something that we should consider how much we're consuming. So when we get into this idea of caffeine and hormonal health, really we have to bring it back to more about the nervous system and less about hormones. And the end result is a hormonal dysregulation, but the primary focal point should be helping heal the nervous system. And we talk about that all the time on this podcast. Sleep, chiropractic care, healthy nutrition, hydration, movement, sunlight, those are all ways to kind of maximize the nervous system's adaptability and resilience. One of the questions that we get a lot is things like, Kate asked, can you have sensitivity to caffeine? Can you have sensitivity to caffeine? It's a great question, Kate. Let's put it in this way. How much caffeine, another person asked, how much caffeine should I consume? And can I be sensitive to it? So this really goes back to genetics. If your liver is either a slow or fast metabolizer, then it will affect everyone differently. If you're a fast metabolizer of caffeine, the effects on the body will be, hey, I had a cup of coffee and I could go to sleep at night, right? At some level, that's caffeine adaptation, which we'll talk about, is different than caffeine metabolism, okay? So let's just take an average person, neither slow nor fat nor fast, and let's just look at caffeine as a whole. Caffeine, on average, has a half-life of about 6 hours. So what does that mean? It means that when you consume caffeine, 100 milligrams of caffeine in a single setting, 6 hours later, let's say you consume that at 6 a.m., 6 hours later, half will still be in the body. And 12 hours later, a quarter will still be in the body, which means if you consume it at 6 a.m., 6 p.m., you still have 25% or 25 milligrams if you consumed 100 in the morning, 25 milligrams still in your body at 6 p.m. at night. That's significant because if you're not allowing adenosine to build up in the brain and be used, this can alter how deep and restful you sleep. You may still fall asleep, but doesn't mean your sleep architecture is healthy. We're going to get into this on the next part, part two, when we talk about the risks of caffeine and how it affects your sleep. Going back to metabolism and quantity, depending upon how you metabolize caffeine is really dependent upon how much you can consume. What's the safe amount? For most people, my rule of thumb is this. It is best to consume your caffeine before 2 p.m. So if we're looking at caffeine consumption, transparently, I don't care if you consume 400 or 800 milligrams before 2 p.m. The most important thing is cutting it off. Why? Because we want to cut off caffeine so that our adenosine levels can build up so that we can improve our sleep architecture. That is the most important component. And then everyone handles caffeine differently. So for me, a couple hundred milligrams of caffeine pre 2 p.m., I'm doing great on. I feel great. If I were to consume 400, 500, 600, that would probably overexcite my nervous system. I just don't consume that much. So I'm not really, I can't tolerate that much at this moment. Could I build tolerance? Sure, but I don't want to do that. I still want to have some level of sensitivity to caffeine. Most people on an can consume 1 milligram of caffeine per kilogram of body weight. Okay, technically 1 to 3 milligrams of caffeine per kilogram of body weight. What does this mean? It means if, let's just say you weigh 200 pounds. 200 pounds is about 91 or 90 kilograms. So 90 kilograms is roughly 198 pounds or 200 pounds. So a 200-pound person could tolerate 2 to 600 milligrams in a single setting. And from a health perspective, from a perspective of not creating harm, do you want to do that? Not necessarily. Depends on, right, how much caffeine have you consumed over the last couple of weeks? How tolerant are you of caffeine? How well do you metabolize caffeine? For most people, ranging between 100 to 200 pounds, a 100 milligram dose of caffeine is pretty solid. Like, that's a good dose of caffeine. And that dose that of 100 milligrams of caffeine is enough to create usually an effect to the body. Would you do that in your first time consuming coffee or caffeine or tea? Maybe not. But over time, that is a healthy dose of caffeine. For me, more importantly, it is all about consuming my caffeine, no matter how many milligrams I consume, again, before 2 p.m., so I'm not disrupting my circadian rhythm, that I'm getting at least 50% of that cleared out by about 8 or 9 o'clock at night. So if you're asking me for my strategy, what should be the quantity or when should be the cut? My recommendation is ask yourselves these questions. How well do you metabolize caffeine? How do you know this? Well, you can do genetic testing. You can test those liver enzymes and determine if you're a fast or slow caffeine metabolizer, or you just experiment. When you consume caffeine, even just in smaller doses, does it make you super jittery? Does it make you super nervous? If it does, you're probably a slow caffeine metabolizer. How tolerant are you of caffeine? How long you've been drinking it? Are you a habitual caffeine consumer? If so, you can tolerate more. And then the third is, hey, let's create a cutoff point. You're like, hey, I don't cut off my caffeine till 5 o'clock. Well, let's try to push that back maybe. Let's push it back to 4, 3, 2. Inevitably, if you can cut off your caffeine consumption between the hours of 12 to 2, you're going to really enhance your body's ability to get healthy sleep architecture. Again, you may be sleeping. You just may not be sleeping well. You may be falling asleep. But you may not actually be getting into restorative deep sleep. And therefore, my recommendation is, regardless of how well you think you're sleeping, cutting that caffeine consumption off by 2 o'clock can significantly help enhance your body's ability to get that restorative deep sleep. Okay, so going back to it, what's caffeine? It's a psychoactive substance. It's a plant alkaloid. It binds adenosine receptors, doesn't allow adenosine to have its effects, creates a stimulatory effect to the nervous system. This then in turn stimulates the adrenals to make hormones like cortisol. And when we look at caffeine consumption, 100 milligrams, single dose is solid. Pre 2 p.m., focus on caffeine consumption in the morning, especially on an empty stomach. Now, we've got some other questions that have been kind of proposed to us. Let's dive into them. Let's talk about them. Tracy asked, true or false? For every caffeinated drink you have to drink an extra glass of water. Is that true or false? So that is true. The reason why it's true is caffeine is a diuretic. What does that mean? It just makes you excrete water. It also, keep this in mind, it is not just a diuretic. It also pulls sodium and electrolytes out of your body. So my recommendation is not just drink water, but also drink electrolyte-based water. So should you consume a glass of water for every caffeinated drink you have? Absolutely. I highly recommend to consume a one-to-one ratio of electrolyte-rich water. I like to use element packs to every beverage that you consume of a caffeinated source. It's a great question, Tracy. The Stones asked, holding off on having caffeine until later in the morning and having breakfast with it is best, true or false? It's a great question. So this gets into a little bit of research here when it comes to caffeine consumption in the morning. If you find yourself getting sluggish after 2 o'clock, so let's say 2, 3, 4 p.m., like you're fighting for energy, when you're a mom, it's 3 o'clock, and you're like, just give me an extra shot of espresso. This means that you definitely should delay your consumption of caffeine for at least an hour after waking up. Why? Why? Because you may not be clearing out your adenosine levels. So studies show that adenosine is still present in some people when they rise. And if you awake in the morning and you get a high cortisol spike, which you should get by rising up in the morning and seeing light, seeing blue light, or even having exercise first thing, that cortisol actually clears out extra adenosine in the brain. So if you are to actually delay your caffeine consumption an hour after waking up, you will have a greater energy effect later in the day. The question is, does the first hour, all right, is that more important than the last potentially 3-4 hours of the day? You assess the situation, but it is true. Great question. If you delay your coffee, tea, caffeine, an hour to 90 minutes after arising, you will have a greater energy output later in the day. To even maximize this, so it's just kind of add to this question, to maximize this, for me, what I do is when I rise in the morning, I go into my sauna. All right, so that's going to stimulate cortisol. Maybe it's a short, like 50 jumping jacks, but anything you can do to actually stimulate the body to make a little cortisol will also help pump out and clear out the rest of that adenosine. For you, maybe it's as simple as visualizing, hey, the sun, like waking up and seeing the sun will actually stimulate your circadian rhythm and allow that cortisol production to be made and clear out that extra adenosine. So that's something to think about, but that's absolutely accurate. Holding off on caffeine until later in the morning and having it with breakfast can be best for some. Next week, we'll talk about how we can pair caffeine to be a performance enhancer, especially if you're training. The last question I'll address is, does caffeine stunt your growth? So that's a great question. So does caffeine stunt your growth? So caffeine potentially can impact your hormonal system. Can it affect your growth? No. So the short answer is no. That is a myth. Caffeine does not stunt your growth. It does impact your testosterone levels through a hormone called sex-binding globulin hormone. We will get into this on the next episode of the Real Health Podcast. Thanks for listening in. This kind of summarizes our first part of what is caffeine, what's it doing to the body, and how do we potentially maximize its effects and also mitigate the effects on our sleep. So I hope this was beneficial for you. Thanks for listening to the Real Health Podcast.